Why do I conduct my show in this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Rock and roll, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at RantsRadio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. And welcome to show number 50, the Big 5-0. And I had been considering doing something special for show number 50, but I decided against it, mostly because I just don't have the time to try and do a best of. And I really don't think I have a best of anyway. All my crap is the same one way or another. It's all pretty much the same thing, but I want to congratulate myself for coughing. You know, I'm getting this phlegm in my throat, not phlegm, just stuff in my throat. Ugh, I hate that. But I want to congratulate myself for getting 50 shows completed. Certainly, I didn't know when I started doing this whether or not I was going to be able to accomplish this many shows. You never know what's going to happen in your life when you start it, but I'm very happy to have reached the half century point. And I'm just going to do a regular show. We're going to have a sound clip little later on that I enjoy doing because it'll kill about 15 minutes worth of time. But it's definitely a worthwhile sound clip. And it's going to be Barack Obama's speech at the Democratic Convention on Tuesday night, which is one of the best political speeches I have heard in a long time. And that includes a lot of really good recent ones. At any rate, that'll be later on. I got an email. Well, let me tell you the story about how this happened. Now, my wife gets emails sometimes from people, and she got sent one from the group Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, which is put up by John O'Neill, no relation to the John O'Neill who was killed in the 9/11 attacks. Spelled differently, I think. I'm not sure. At any rate, this guy is an old nemesis of John Kerry's. He served on PT boats after Kerry had left Vietnam. And he is basically a goon. He worked for Richard Nixon to investigate or to antagonize Kerry, and now he's doing the same thing for the current Republican Party. And he got together a group of people who said that Kerry isn't worthy being a commander-in-chief. And my wife sent me that email and asked me how I responded to it, and I responded with a very nice and very long article from the USA Today, of all places, which is not necessarily the best newspaper in the country, but I responded to that with with that article from USA Today, which interviewed people that Kerry served with, as well as former commanders and other people who knew him in the military, and all had nothing but praise for Kerry's bravery, even if they don't particularly care for his politics. And to make a point here real quick before I get on to the real thing that I want to talk about. Look, whether or not you want to vote for Kerry based on military service, hey, that's your business, okay? If you think that's important, fine. If you don't think that's important, that's fine, too. And there's certainly, if you don't think that Kerry is qualified to be president of the United States for other reasons, you're certainly entitled to that opinion. And I'm not going to argue with that, but my point is if you're going to make decisions based on that, you should at least know the truth. And Kerry served well in Vietnam. And the major complaints that I had that he got out too quickly, but he got three Purple Hearts. And maybe, you know, the argument is, well, you know, he didn't really deserve one. It was just a little scratch. And so, come on, people. And someone's made the point that if Kerry gets elected, we'll have a president who has actually killed someone in combat. I don't know if you can say that for anyone who's been in office before. Certainly, I'm sure there have been people early on who have been known for killing people, perhaps Zachary Taylor or Andrew Jackson, who were war heroes, and certainly Ulysses Grant, although he may not have ever personally killed somebody, you never know. But it would be an interesting thing to have a president, certainly in the modern times, who has actually killed someone. It does bother me a little bit that we make kind of a big deal about the military service as if it's the only really important thing. Because, you know, there was a reason why when this government was formed, they wanted civilian control of the military. They don't want the military running things. The military is a wonderful thing, and I am all for the military in terms of self-defense and all that. I certainly am against a lot of the waste that goes on there. I'm certainly against a lot of the corruption and a lot of the sexism. And I'm certainly against the Pentagon being behind wars that are illegal, both in international law and U.S. law. But I'm for the military. And it really does kind of bother me that we have to play up the fact that, you know, Kerry killed somebody or Kelly was perfectly willing to use the military. The military ought to be a last resort. It ought to be a last resort. And an article that I saw recently saying that while the Democratic convention was going on, that Dick Cheney was giving a speech to Pendleton, Camp Pendleton, the Marine Training Center out in California, saying, you know, the reason why we're attacking is because to not attack would be a sign of weakness. We attack to show strength, and our enemies will fear us because we show strength, blah, blah, blah. But, of course, we use strength in Iraq to take over Iraq, and that's causing more people to attack us. And we're going to use, if Mr. Bush gets in office again, all indications are that he will probably go after Iran next. And if you think Iraq is trouble now, and they're still, you know, the news isn't reporting it as much as they used to. I guess it's got old now. But if you listen to the reports and you see that things are just as bad now as they ever have been. In fact, they've killed as many people this month as they have last month. So the transition to the temporary government, puppet government as I call it, has not gone very well. And of course, they still haven't finished up the job in Afghanistan either. As I keep saying, look, if you want to be a warmonger, at least be a competent warmonger. You know, you could have taken care of Afghanistan, which even I kind of sort of agree with, excuse me, and you could have really made a concerted effort not only to capture Osama bin Laden, but to get with the entire world community to fight terrorism, which is something that threatens everybody, not just the United States, but it threatens all of us. And you do that by a combination of many things, but invading a country that had nothing to do with terrorism attacks against the United States was not going to solve any problems. And carrying out personal vendettas, using 9/11 as an excuse to do anything you want, is not proper policy. Iraq could have been dealt with in another way, in a better way. And even if we decided we even needed to do so, America is not safer now. But anyway, that's not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about this email that I got from in response. But basically, what I wrote at the back of the, at the end of the email, and it was something that it was Kathy's mistake because it wasn't really meant for the eyes of the person who sent the email. And I basically said this person is basically a Bush cultist who is unwilling to believe anything bad about Bush and willing to believe anything bad about John Kerry, or anything, unwilling to listen to anything good about John Kerry. It doesn't matter to them that Kerry's got three Purple Hearts, a Bronze Star, and a Silver Star. Was brave in combat. Even those people who didn't care for him very much in combat recognized the fact that he was brave, and even those who don't necessarily agree with his politics agree that he did brave and good duty in Vietnam. And I wrote, you know, this person is just a Bush cultist, and, you know, eventually, you know, if there's any kind of thing as an afterlife judgment, she's going to have to answer to their own, to this, which this person replies. I don't know if it was you or your husband who wrote that last part, but I know where I'm going when I die. And this is what she wrote. Any true Christian who is truly God-fearing knows who to vote for in this election year. You know, I don't claim to speak for God. I don't even claim to be in God's good graces. I don't claim to know much anything about a being that supposedly knows everything and is all-powerful. I can't comprehend that because I'm human and I'm fallible. I'm an agnostic. And I'm an agnostic because I also don't have that switch in my head that says there definitely isn't a God or even the idea of a God. Because to me, that's a far more complex issue than we can currently understand. And I'm full of doubts, I'm full of faults, and I'm quite capable of being wrong. And I have been wrong about things in the past, and I will continue to be wrong about things in the future. Unlike right-wing radio talk show hosts, I make no claim to perfection. I do not have to sit here and tell you that everything I say is not only the total truth as I see it, but the total truth, period. If I give an opinion, it's an opinion. If I give it a fact, I back it up somehow. Or I try to, anyway. But I don't know everything, and I don't claim to. And at best, I believe that if God does exist, that we have yet to grasp the very concept of God. And I think that we still see God in terms that we define based upon our humanity. You know, we create God in our image. And as I see it, the idea of God, a being who is basically, in my opinion, the sum total of everything in the universe, given sentience, God is beyond all of those definitions, something greater than even we can currently imagine. Neither male nor female, neither black nor white, certainly not Democrat or Republican. God is above and beyond all of that. And I come across my doubtfulness that I have. I come across this honestly. And I try to be true to myself as best as I can. Because if we are going to face a judgment in a life beyond this one, the best way you can handle that sort of judgment is to look at yourself and be honest with yourself. If you can look in the mirror, if you can look at yourself and realize that you screw up from time to time and forgive yourself for your screw-ups and try not to make the same mistakes twice and try to improve yourself, then you can face the harshest of judges. If I were to face Jesus or whoever in a judgment afterlife right now, I would be scared, certainly. But I can look Jesus in the face and say, look, I know I fucked up. I'm full of doubts. That's how I was made. And because of that, I don't fear extra-earthly retribution. I don't fear after-this-life judgment. Because I'm very secure within myself. I know what I'm capable of. And I know that sometimes I don't live up to my potential. And I try to do the best that I can. I'm fallible. And I recognize that. Whatever sins I have, and I have many, pride is not one of them. I am as I am. And I am as I was made by whatever Creator made me. I can be no more and no less. But the emailer... their certainty scares me because it's the kind of certainty that makes people do things that they otherwise wouldn't think of doing. Yes, I doubt. I admit that I doubt. And in my opinion, doubt is a good thing. Doubt is a good thing because it makes you think twice before doing something that you'll regret for the rest of your life. Doubt is what tries to talk you out of shooting a doctor in a healthcare clinic because you believe they're going to perform an abortion. Doubt tries to keep you from filling a truck with explosives and blowing up a government building because you hate the government and you hate the very idea of government. Doubt prevents you from hijacking an airplane and flying it into a building. All of those things that I mentioned were accomplished by people who were certain of their righteousness, and believed to the last breath that they were doing the right thing. They were certain. They were sure. There wasn't a doubt in their mind. And to me, that is the fundamental difference between myself and that person who sent me that email. And to me, that is the fundamental difference between the current batch of Republicans and the current batch of Democrats. I don't necessarily mean the Democrats that are in office now, but those who are like me, who are just looking for a change to make a better life and a better world for everybody. The difference is that we doubt and they are certain. That's why they are going to win in the short term, because that certainty gives them focus. And it gives them a ruthlessness that makes them go the extra mile to do those things that they need to win in the short term. But in the long run, in the long term, it always falls back on them. It always winds up hurting them. And that's an important thing that we have to remember. They're going to go too far because too far is the only possible place that they can go. Thucydides wrote this: those who have a certain amount of wealth will always want to get twice what they have. And it never stops. And whether you're talking about wealth and power or just an obsession with a goal, eventually they go too far. And they are going to suffer for it. And unfortunately, we have to suffer along with them. With that, let's take a little break. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
The next senator from the state of Illinois, Barack Obama.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Dick Durbin. You make us all proud. On behalf of the great state of Illinois, crossroads of a nation, land of Lincoln, let me express my deepest gratitude for the privilege of addressing this convention. Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook, a domestic servant to the British. But my grandfather had larger dreams for his son. Through hard work and perseverance, my father got a scholarship to study in a magical place, America, that shone as a beacon of freedom and opportunity to so many who had come before. While studying here, my father met my mother. She was born in a town on the other side of the world, in Kansas. Her father worked on oil rigs and farms through most of the Depression. The day after Pearl Harbor, my grandfather signed up for duty, joined Patton's army, marched across Europe. Back home, my grandmother raised a baby and went to work on a bomber assembly line. After the war, they studied on the GI Bill, bought a house through FHA, and later moved west, all the way to Hawaii, in search of opportunity. And they, too, had big dreams for their daughter. A common dream born of two continents. My parents shared not only an improbable love, they shared an abiding faith in the possibilities of this nation. They would give me an African name, Barack, or Blessed, believing that in a tolerant America, your name is no barrier to success. They imagined me going to the best schools in the land, even though they weren't rich, because in a generous America, you don't have to be rich to achieve your potential. They're both passed away now. And yet I know that on this night, they look down on me with great pride. They stand here, and I stand here today, grateful for the diversity of my heritage, aware that my parents' dreams live on in my two precious daughters. I stand here knowing that my story is part of the larger American story, that I owe a debt to all of those who came before me, and that in no other country on earth is my story even possible. Tonight, we gather to affirm the greatness of our nation. Not because of the height of our skyscrapers, or the power of our military, or the size of our economy. Our pride is based on a very simple premise, summed up in a declaration made over 200 years ago. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is the true genius of America. A faith in simple dreams, an insistence on small miracles, that we can tuck in our children at night and know that they are fed and clothed and safe from harm. That we can say what we think, write what we think, without hearing a sudden knock on the door. That we can have an idea and start our own business without paying a bribe. That we can participate in the political process without fear of retribution, and that our votes will be counted, at least most of the time. This year, in this election, we are called to reaffirm our values and our commitments, to hold them against a hard reality, and see how we're measuring up to the legacy of our forebears and the promise of future generations. And fellow Americans, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, I say to you tonight, we have more work to do. More work to do for the workers I met in Galesburg, Illinois, who are losing their union jobs at the Maytag plant that's moving to Mexico, and now are having to compete with their own children for jobs that pay $7 an hour. More to do for the father that I met who was losing his job and choking back the tears, wondering how he would pay $4,500 a month for the drugs his son needs without the health benefits that he counted on. More to do for the young woman in East St. Louis, and thousands more like her, who has the grades, has the drive, has the will, but doesn't have the money to go to college. Now, don't get me wrong. The people I meet in small towns and big cities, in diners and office parks, they don't expect government to solve all their problems. They know they have to work hard to get ahead, and they want to. Go into the collar counties around Chicago, and people will tell you they don't want their tax money wasted by a welfare agency or by the Pentagon. Go into any inner city neighborhood, and folks will tell you that government alone can't teach our kids to learn. They know that parents have to teach, that children can't achieve unless we raise their expectations and turn off the television sets and eradicate the slander that says a black youth with a book is acting white. They know those things. People don't expect government to solve all their problems. But they sense deep in their bones that with just a slight change in priorities, we can make sure that every child in America has a decent shot at life and that the doors of opportunity remain open to all. They know we can do better, and they want that choice. In this election, we offer that choice. Our party has chosen a man to lead us who embodies the best this country has to offer, and that man is John Kerry. John Kerry understands the ideals of community, faith, and service because they've defined his life. From his heroic service to Vietnam, to his years as a prosecutor and lieutenant governor, through 2 decades in the United States Senate, he's devoted himself to this country. Again and again, we've seen him make tough choices when easier ones were available. His values and his record affirm what is best in us. John Kerry believes in an America where hard work is rewarded. So instead of offering tax breaks to companies shipping jobs overseas, he offers them to companies creating jobs here at home. John Kerry believes in an America where all Americans can afford the same health coverage our politicians in Washington have for themselves. John Kerry believes in energy independence, so we aren't held hostage to the profits of oil companies or the sabotage of foreign oil fields. John Kerry believes in the constitutional freedoms that have made our country the envy of the world, and he will never sacrifice our basic liberties, nor use faith as a wedge to divide us. And John Kerry believes that in a dangerous world, war must be an option sometimes, but it should never be the first option. You know, a while back, I met a young man named Seamus in a VFW hall in East Moline, Illinois. He was a good-looking kid, 6'2", 6'3", clear-eyed, with an easy smile. He told me he joined the Marines and was heading to Iraq the following week. And as I listened to him explain why he'd enlisted, the absolute faith he had in our country and its leaders, his devotion to duty and service, I thought, this young man was all that any of us might ever hope for in a child. But then I asked myself, are we serving Seamus as well as he's serving us? I thought of the 900 men and women, sons and daughters, husbands and wives, friends and neighbors who won't be returning to their own hometowns. I thought of the families I'd met who were struggling to get by without a loved one's full income, or whose loved ones had returned with a limb missing or nerves shattered, but still lacked long-term health benefits because they were reservists. When we send our young men and women into harm's way, we have a solemn obligation not to fudge the numbers or shade the truth about why they are going, to care for their families while they're gone, to tend to the soldiers upon their return, and to never, ever go to war without enough troops to win the war, secure the peace, and earn the respect of the world. Now, let me be clear. We have real enemies in the world. These enemies must be found, they must be pursued, and they must be defeated. John Kerry knows this. And just as Lieutenant Kerry did not hesitate to risk his life to protect the men who served with him in Vietnam, President Kerry will not hesitate one moment to use our military might to keep America safe and secure. John Kerry believes in America, and he knows that it's not enough for just some of us to prosper. For alongside our famous individualism, there's another ingredient in the American saga. a belief that we're all connected as one people. If there is a child on the south side of Chicago who can't read, that matters to me even if it's not my child. If there's a senior citizen somewhere who can't pay for their prescription drugs and having to choose between medicine and the rent, that makes my life poorer even if it's not my grandparent. If there's an Arab American family being rounded up without benefit of an attorney or due process, that threatens my civil liberties. It is that fundamental belief, I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper, that makes this country work. It's what allows us to pursue our individual dreams and yet still come together as one American family. E pluribus unum, out of many, one. Now, even as we speak, there are those who are preparing to divide us, the spin masters, the negative ad peddlers, who embrace the politics of anything goes. Well, I say to them tonight, there is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America. There is not a black America and a white America and Latino America and Asian America. There's the United States of America. The pundits like to slice and dice our country into red states and blue states. Red states for Republicans, blue states for Democrats. But I've got news for them, too. We worship an awesome God in the blue states, and we don't like federal agents poking around in our libraries in the red states. We coach Little League in the blue states, and yes, we've got some gay friends in the red states. There are patriots who oppose the war in Iraq, and they're patriots who supported the war in Iraq. We are one people, all of us pledging allegiance to the Stars and Stripes, all of us defending the United States of America. In the end, that's what this election is about. Do we participate in a politics of cynicism, or do we participate in a politics of hope? John Kerry calls on us to hope. John Edwards calls on us to hope. I'm not talking about blind optimism here, the almost willful ignorance that thinks unemployment will go away if we just don't think about it, or healthcare crisis will solve itself if we just ignore it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something more substantial. It's the hope of slaves sitting around a fire singing freedom songs. The hope of immigrants setting out for distant shores. The hope of a young naval lieutenant bravely patrolling the Mekong Delta. The hope of a mill worker's son who dares to defy the odds. The hope of a skinny kid with a funny name who believes that America has a place for him too. Hope in the face of difficulty, hope in the face of uncertainty, the audacity of hope. In the end, that is God's greatest gift to us, the bedrock of this nation, a belief in things not seen, a belief that there are better days ahead. I believe that we can give our middle class relief and provide working families with a road to opportunity. I believe we can provide jobs to the jobless, homes to the homeless, and reclaim young people in cities across America from violence and despair. I believe that we have a righteous wind at our backs, and that as we stand on the crossroads of history, we can make the right choices and meet the challenges that face us. America, tonight, if you feel the same energy that I do, if you feel the same urgency that I do, if you feel the same passion that I do, if you feel the same hopefulness that I do, if we do what we must do, then I have no doubt that all across the country, from Florida to Oregon, from Washington to Maine, The people will rise up in November, and John Kerry will be sworn in as president, and John Edwards will be sworn in as vice president, and this country will reclaim its promise, and out of this long political darkness, a brighter day will come. Thank you very much, everybody. God bless you.
Now, I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen out, you mother...
There's a website fighting President Bunny Pants every day.
BartCop.com.
BartCop mixes unrelenting outrage and piercing humor with his favorite fine tequila.
BartCop.com.
On the web since 1996 with news and commentary not approved by Karl Rove.
BartCop.com.
Live chat rooms to discuss Bush's crimes of the day.
BartCop Radio.
Uncensored invective aimed at those who deserve it most.
BartCop.com.
Fighting the Bush family evil empire.
BartCop.com.
But we need your help.
Go there now.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
BartCop.com.
This is Joe Vecchio of the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Rant Radio is a non-profit internet station that operates entirely without funding and does not go out of its way to solicit donations from its listeners. However, being one of the fastest-growing internet radio stations on the web, they need bandwidth. So if you have any bandwidth you can donate, please email them at info@rantradio.com or log on to rantradio.com and click on Contact. Keep Rant Radio free and independent. And if we find out that you have bandwidth and refuse to donate it, I'm going to come over there and break both your kneecaps. And we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and my email is joevec@bellsouth.net. Well, I hope you enjoyed Mr. Obama's speech. It was certainly among the best, if not the best, political speech I have heard in a long time. I did not get to hear Senator Edwards' speech this evening because I was at work. And because I work at evenings, I generally tend to miss some stuff. I know it's being repeated right now, but I got to do the show right now. So I'm sure I'll see it later. And from what I read, he said some really good things. But you kind of expect that from the people who are writing that. So. But Edwards is a very good speaker, and hopefully he'll be a very good vice president. Although I have my doubts that Mr. Kerry will win the election, not because I don't think he's worthy or because I don't think he's going to run a good campaign. I just figure the sons of bitches in power now are going to do everything they fucking can to stay there. And there's going to be some sort of September-October surprise. Anyway, that was it. Work tonight. Now, I think it was in my last show, I talked about the shouting match I had with the union president and about how upset I got with her because of the way she was treating me, in my opinion. You know, I don't put up with shit from a lot of people. I don't care who you are. I can be a very honest person. I can be one of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. But there's a couple of ways you can really, really piss me off. And if you really want to piss me off, one of the ways you can do that is just by dissing me, by treating me as if I'm inconsequential, or by nitpicking me on details when I've got a larger point to make. For those of you who didn't listen to the last show, let me explain what happened. I'm trying to become a union steward or a union reps. Union shop steward is what they call it, basically. It's the next step up from being a union member. My union, Local 2127 at the IBEW, of which I am a proud member, is looking for shop stewards. And I knew they were looking for shop stewards. And even though I've been only in the plant for about 8 or 9 months or so, I feel that I'm qualified to be a shop steward because I'm very smart. I pick things up very quickly. I've worked for a short time in pretty much every area of that shop. And I pick things up, like I said, very, very quickly. So I understand what the needs are, for the most part, of each area. And I'm not afraid to talk, as you all well know. And I'm very good at, you know, meeting and talking to people. And I'm a good problem solver. When I worked at Anime Week in Atlanta, one of my duties during the convention would be to put out fires. And for the most part, I did a pretty good job of that. Of course, nothing ever serious ever really happened. These are work issues. And I'm sure some serious things will come up along those lines. But at any rate, I went up to her. I went up to her and I had been talking to her after she had talked to me about saying, well, you need to do this, you know, you need to talk to me privately, which I thought, okay, no, you know, no problem. And then when I finally, you know, managed to approach her a couple of days later when I saw her to see if she had the time to talk, you know, she said she was busy, but she would get back with me. And I said, no problem, you know, and I was understanding on that because, hey, you know, you're the union president. You're busy. You got shit to do. I understand that. But then she started telling me how she didn't like the way I had approached her before. And I just kind of went, whatever, you know, and I kind of waved my hand and I walked away. And then she followed me and I got into a shouting match with her because she kept pushing the issue. And when people push me, I push back. And it's not very pleasant. And I lost it. I completely lost it. And I was screaming in her face. I didn't use any obscenities. But I was screaming in her face about, you know, what I thought of how she ran things and about how sensitive she is. And it seems to me there's something wrong when someone feels the need so strongly. Someone who's supposedly very secure in her position feels the need to go after somebody for what is considered to be a minor dissing, which is what I did to her. I just kind of waved her off and walked away. And she couldn't handle that, and she had to come and have a piece of me, and I wanted a piece of her along those lines. Get your minds out of the gutter. But I spoke with the union vice president today, who apparently was not aware that I had had a shouting match with Robbie. You would think that the union president would let the union vice president know that there was somebody yelling and screaming at her a few days ago. And they had a big meeting about that. We had a union meeting on Tuesday, which I missed because I had to take my wife to the hospital, as I need to do from time to time, to make it a little easier on her. I'm racking up the medications, by the way. They are increasing my glucophage to help me with my diabetes. And also they prescribe some sleeping pills for me to help me get some sleep at night because I'm having problems sleeping, as I've always had. But anyway, back to the original story. I had driven my wife to the hospital, so I couldn't go to the union meeting, and I was gonna bring up some more complaints. But quite frankly, I talked to her about the situation between me and Robbie, and I talked to her, between Robbie and I, excuse me, my wife would get on me for that. I talked to her about the situation between Robbie and I and about how I didn't understand how she can treat somebody like that and how the union leadership can treat someone like that who honestly wants to help, granted doesn't have a lot of experience, but is willing to learn and is very smart and who can learn and it would be a very good shop steward, and why she would treat people like that, and why she's so sensitive to how she is being talked to. I didn't say anything mean. I know I can be a little straightforward sometimes, but there's a difference between being straightforward and being mean. I get into what I call management mode sometimes at work, where I'll just say, you know, if I need something, if somebody's there who I can help, say, can you get this for me, please, or can you do this, please? You know, if I can't leave the line and do something that I need to do, you know, I'll let people know, hey, can you do this for me, please? I need this. And I'll usually say, please, not always. I'll say, can you do this? Get that for me, would you please? You know, like that. And when I approached Robbie about being a shop steward, I said, well, I didn't use the word shop steward. I said, I want to be a union rep. What do I do? That tone. That kind of tone. How do I go about this? I don't know the exact words, but it was basically, I want to be a union rep. What can I, you know, how can I accomplish this? And that was basically my tone. Exactly that, pretty much. You know, And I don't understand why she was so upset about that. She said she was upset because I brought it up in front of a bunch of other people, which I don't understand why that should be upsetting her to begin with. So I don't know if she's just blowing me off, you know. And I know I've got a temper, but I would have less of a temper if people didn't push me on it. But I talked to the vice president about it, and she wasn't even aware of what was going on. And I stated that I still want to be a shop steward, but I hear from the time, for all the time, from people in the shop who are either with the union or not with the union, that the union leadership isn't meaningful, that doesn't do anything. And certainly it doesn't do anything for some areas of the plant. And I talk about the paint line where I used to work. And I say, look, the people who work on the paint line are basically treated like dogs. They're expected to do a lot, and they never seem to get any thanks for it, like some of the other areas get a lot of thanks. They had a big Red Lobster party for some of the assembly people one day, and they didn't have anything for the people on the paint line. And my feeling is, look, it's a fucking union for everybody. You know, just because the bulk of the votes for Robbie came from a specific area of the shop, which gives her enough of a majority, doesn't necessarily mean that you have to ignore everybody else. The paint line works very, very fucking hard. It is the most physical job at that plant. And nobody gives them any credit for anything. And one of my biggest complaints is that the supervisors who run the paint line are basically running those guys into the ground. And one of the things that they will do is that they will take the new people who are coming in and they'll put them all on the hanging side where you put the parts on, which, let me tell you, is much more physical than taking them off. Taking them off is difficult in a different way, because if they're hung badly, it takes time to stack these things properly, and you don't always have time to do that, especially if you're undermanned, which they were occasionally. They've got more people on the line now, which is a better deal. But the point is, it's more difficult to hang the stuff, because some of the boxes you put on there are very heavy, and you cannot handle them with two hands because you have to hang them on the hook. And if you're not a strong person, there's no way you're going to be able to grab that box with one hand easily and hang them on as many hooks as they'd like. When I was hanging, the few times I had to do that, I basically took what I could and put it up there because my shoulders hurt like crazy. I've got, I guess it's a rotator cuff. I threw up my arm when I was a kid, and I can't throw very much for very long anymore because my shoulder just pains me like crazy. Very dull, strong pain. Not a sharp pain, a dull pain, but it hurts a lot. And I could lift, you know, a couple of, after three or four of those big heavy boxes, especially, I could barely move my shoulder. So I had to take my time doing it. And the supervisor spends most of his time over there watching them and making sure they hang something on every hook, because all they're concerned about is numbers. And they don't care that if you hang things wrong, they get messed up. They don't care if the guys are getting injured. They had one new guy come, and he was a retired guy who had took an extra job to help pay for his son's college. This guy was 60-something years old, and they had him hanging stuff. That guy shouldn't be on that line. And they put the new people there with practically no supervision and make it easier for the supervisor to intimidate them, which is what he does. And it's not just the guy on my shift. It's the supervisor on all the shifts. They all do the same thing, and they all work together. Excuse me a second. Let me get some water here. You need experienced people. And first of all, it's dangerous to have inexperienced people on the line to begin with, especially if you're talking about hanging. Now, you know, the lady I talked to, the vice president, said, well, she'd never heard anybody give any complaints. And I said, yeah, but a lot of people don't know to complain. And a lot of people are afraid to say anything. And there's a lot of people who believe that it doesn't make any difference, that the union won't do anything. And if you're talking about getting more people into the union, these are the type of issues that you have to address. I realize that we're in Georgia and this is a right-to-work state and the unions are not as powerful as they are up north. But these are still things that the union can accomplish. And if they want to get more members and they want their membership to take them seriously, these are issues that have to be addressed. And the unions do not make their presence felt to anybody that's not in that area. Nobody goes up and walks around, says, I'm the union steward, and introduces himself or herself to people. Because a lot of men and women, mostly men and women of color, who are in the union, and they rarely go out of their way, it seems to me. The leadership does. The stewards, They rarely seem to go out of their way to introduce themselves to everybody so that they know who's working in what areas. Myself, I want to be a steward because I want to represent the paint line. And I want to make sure that everybody, and if that's the case, if that ever happens for me, I want to make sure that everybody who's working on that paint line understands that I am there for them. That if they have a problem or a complaint, whether they're in the union or not, that I am there for them. And I am there to help them out and to answer for them. And to talk to the supervisor about things that are going on. You know? And that's what union stewards, shop stewards should do, in my opinion. Obviously, I need some training because there's things I need to know about how to do things and, you know, whatnot. But I think I'd be a very good shop steward. And I think I'd do a pretty good job of it. And if they need people there, I'm ready. And it just frustrates me when you have a union president of the local. She's not the president of the entire union, mind. She's the president of the local. When you have a president who seems to be more interested in people talking to her a certain way, sucking up to her, which is basically what I, you know, is the term I'm looking for. Just if you don't suck up to her the right way, then she doesn't want to know you. You know, I am what I am, as I said earlier. And I speak very straightforwardly. This is what I need. This is what I'd like. How do I accomplish this? And there are a lot of people who simply don't understand that way of thinking. And they mistrust. You know, a lot of people think New Yorkers and Northeasterners in general, but New Yorkers in particular, are rude. We ain't rude. We're just very straightforward. Yes, some guys are rude. Some guys from New York are rude, but shit, some guys from the South are rude. I've certainly met plenty from both sides. But when you're talking about just regular talking about stuff, New Yorkers aren't rude. They're just very straightforward. They don't have, they don't have time for the kind of bullshit. Especially the way Southerners talk. They like to talk about things in a roundabout way. And that's cool, and I like that, and I appreciate that. That part of the culture that allows you to talk about it. But just because someone talks differently like that, you know, they see New Yorkers as just mean. And they're not being mean. That's just the way they are. When you live in a city of 14 million people, you do not always have time for niceties. I mean, that's just reality. But people in New York are pleasant and kind. And in fact, it was surprising because there were people, I remember reading articles about how people didn't realize that New Yorkers, you know, valued family and stuff like that. They just thought, you know, they lived in these small towns and were fed basically Republican propaganda about what New Yorkers were and what liberals were and stuff like that. And they just simply assumed that all New Yorkers were wild, crazy, sex-crazed, drug-using maniacs who knew how to get money and were very immoral and ripped people off all the time, blah, blah, blah. And it's just not like that, man. It's just not like that. There's elements of that in every big city and in every small town, yes. But New Yorkers are just as much family-oriented as the next guy. Anyway, to get back to my original point, and I tend to ramble on. This is me rambling on. I got another 12 minutes or so. No, is it 12 minutes? No, about 10 minutes. About 7 minutes. I can't keep track of time. I got another 7 minutes to talk. But, you know, it just frustrates me and upsets me. I was talking to a young guy. I'm on an assembly line right now with basically everybody on there except for the people who are packing stuff are temps. And they haven't been hired fully yet. I'm the only guy who's not a temp, but I'm still relatively new. And the young guy I'm talking to who's on the front of the line today, nice guy, very nice guy, very intelligent. And he's talking to me about shit that I'm like, whoa, this guy has no college at all, and he's talking to me about quantum physics and shit, and I have like no fucking clue. Hell, he could be bullshitting me. Probably is. You know, he's a 23-year-old kid. And, you know, he could be pulling my leg about a lot of things, but, you know, the way he talks about stuff, he sounds very convincing. But we were talking about that, you know, and he was like, are you surprised? You know, are you surprised? That's just human nature. That's the way shit is. And I said, yeah, but, you know, you can go around that, you know. And he's a nice kid, but he still has a lot to experience yet. And you can read a lot from books and you can study a lot of stuff, but practical experience is the best thing. And, you know, I was very happy for him because he's got a goal in mind of what he wants to do. And he's working this job until, you know, those goals come into play. And I applaud him for that. You know, I'm just trying to struggle to get by. I'm hopeful that the radio gig will lead to something in the long run. I've got no qualms about that. And I don't see why I should have to work. You know, we on the liberal side, we have this anathema towards money. And I'm like, look, I'm not looking to become a fucking millionaire. Just help me to make enough money so that I can break out of this poverty. Shit, I'm trying to save up enough money to declare bankruptcy. Can you imagine that? Because, you know, there's a filing fee that you have to have. And that's like, it's like $600 to $800, depending on, well, I think it's $600. And a lawyer is going to charge you a certain amount of money. I could go through legal aid, but I still got to pay the $600 filing fee. I can't clear all of my debts out without declaring bankruptcy. And it's remarkable to me how I have to pay that kind of money to declare bankruptcy. If I could afford to shell out $600 in one swoop like that, I wouldn't have so many debt problems. I'm trying to raise $70 for a new friggin' mixer, and I can't seem to do that. Yeah. But anyway, things at the workshop or things where I work could be a lot better, and they could be a lot better if the union leadership would take a stronger hand in that. The union stewards and the union leadership need to get more active, and they need to get more active in the areas where they have been inactive. And I talked to one guy who ran against Robbie, the union president, in the last election, and basically he was treated like a traitor just for running up against. I think the lady that I talked to today, the vice president, I think she ought to be the president of the union, to be perfectly honest. I think she ought to be the fucking president, because I think she's got her head on straight, and she at least is willing to listen to you, and it doesn't care if you're not sucking up to her. And really, if you're a president, you have to be more capable of listening to people who are saying things in a way you don't want to, and not less. There's something wrong with someone who's so sensitive about how they're talked to. And if you've got a advice to somebody, say, listen, you know, I understand you just meant this, but, you know, you really need to do it this way. Like using the example that I had before where I spoke to Robbie in front of a bunch of people. You know, if she had said to me, listen, you know, really try not to talk about those sort of things around a group of people, you know. But instead she made it personal. She said, I don't like the way you talk to me. I was like, come on, man. You know, and that was the same thing that happened with that incident where I was trying to tell her with the guys on the line. She spent half the fucking time trying to figure out exactly what I was told, exactly who told me what, you know. And it's like, look, I know what happened, you know. And you're concentrating on some semantics while in the meantime, the real issue, the real problem is still going on. And you're not doing anything to change that. And that's the important thing. And as I said, that's where the union needs to take control of a certain issue. That's where they need to look at and say, hey, this is not right. You know, we need to make some changes here. And we need to take a hand in it. So, anyway, I see by the clock on the wall, and if I've got this pegged right, I got about a minute or so to talk, a minute and a half, whatever. I'll continue yakking. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. Once again, the URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com. Please look in and make a comment on a section if you want. That's fine. And my email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Please email me. I'm always looking to get feedback from the show. We've been having some pretty good conversations in the comment section. I've got four or five regulars who come in there. Some of them are old friends. Some of them are people I just met through the blog. So, at any rate, I want to thank everybody for listening. And again, I congratulate myself, since I do this all by myself, for show number 50. And we will be back on Sunday night on rantradio.com. Actually, I'm not sure if this is going to get on Thursday night. There was a problem with their automation system, and I don't know if they're there to fix it. I guess we'll find out tomorrow night, because Sunday I was able to load the show in manually through the Shoutcast, and I'm not able to do that on Thursday nights because I work. But anyway, thanks again to everybody. I hope you all have a good time, and I will see you all next show. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe radio show signing off. Bye-bye. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe radio show has been a production of Jove Enterprises Incorporated.